brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you. With the cost of living in the UK rising to painful levels, we are all feeling the pinch in some way. A recent survey conducted by KPMG found that the rising cost of goods and services, along with higher household bills and taxes, are having a noticeable effect upon our spending and saving habits. On the whole, we're all cutting back on non-essential spending like eating out, experiences, holidays, and beauty products or services. But for some, the effect of the rise in basic costs is far more severe and leaves families making the heartbreaking decision between buying food or buying basic hygiene products like toothpaste, deodorant, washing powder, and sanitary products. The percentage of families seeking the help of hygiene banks is on the rise as increasing numbers of working class families are not able to make ends meet every month. The situation for some is desperate, and I think it's important that we highlight this on the Natural Beauty Show and explore how, as a united community in the UK, we can help each other at this tough time. Let's remember first of all that this is not a vanity project. Not being able to wash your clothes, hair or body can have massive negative implications on your ability to gain and retain employment, be accepted in social groups and deeper inside your self-esteem and confidence. This situation is serious. Today, I'm going to start by hearing from the founder of the Hygiene Bank, a charitable organisation that was set up with the sole intention of providing basic household and personal hygiene products for those in need. Joining me now is the founder, Lizzie Hall. Now, with the rise in the cost of living and poverty being something that's quite a dominant term on our lips these days, I'm really sort of privileged to have you with us today, Lizzie, to talk us through what the Hygiene Bank is and why you set it up. So let's start with a bit about your background and how on earth you came to setting this sort of foundation up.
How it came to be. Well, back in 2018, I watched a film called I, Daniel Blake. And I was really struck by the main character in the film, Casey, needing to go to a food bank and asking for some basic, well, she was asking for period products, actually, and they didn't have any. Later on in the film, you see her shoplifting, and she's caught shoplifting. And what she's stolen are razors, period products, and deodorant. And I have to be honest, it had never crossed my mind before that if you can't afford food, then you probably can't afford some of those other basic essentials. And whilst, yes, they're not life and death, they are a real barrier into how we can contribute to and be part of society. And I'd never really considered that before. So I then went down to my own food bank in Sevenoaks, where I live, who kind of corroborated that, yes, these hygiene essentials were very rarely given. So I was really moved by this. So I sent a WhatsApp to friends and family saying, I'm doing a collection. Took it down to the local food bank and realised that this was a really sort of unearthed element of poverty that we didn't know about, that a lot of people still don't know about. And so I had a marketing background, and so I realised that I could do something about it, and that the response to people donating products weren't just friends and family. They were coming from sort of much further afield. And I realized that people really did want to help as long as I found the facility and the mechanism to make it easy. So I just started out locally, setting up drop-off points, got a logo, set up a few drop-off points in sort of cafes, the leisure center, a couple of shops to get public donations coming in. Realized that this was kind of a national issue, really. So set up a social media Instagram handle and was almost inviting people to see whether we could replicate what I was doing locally, yeah, further afield. And 4 years on, we're a national charity with 160 projects around the country, over 500 volunteers who run those projects, supporting a number of community partners.
So a real success story then.
We've grown, absolutely. But really, success would be that we no longer need to exist. Really, you know, there's a success and success and growth. But yes, we've grown massively in response to need.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, more recently, we've all been experiencing the cost of living, the cost of food, fuel, everything rising quite significantly. And almost overnight, it's been quite a shock to a lot of us, hasn't it? And, you know, so actually, even more need for banks like these. And you're quite right. And I'd like to go back to, you know, how this affects people on a very deep level, because, you know, I actually, before thinking about, you know, hygiene poverty, I felt the same as you. I was really unaware that, you know, actually there were perhaps women out there that couldn't afford basic period products. And then, you know, you just mentioned sort of deodorant and toothpaste is another one. And of course, this can really affect how someone's received socially. It can affect their own self-esteem. It can affect their ability to gain and hold employment.
Yeah.
It's massive, isn't it?
It's
what
massive.
Have you come across with this?
Well, let's go back to kind of what hygiene poverty is, because actually a lot of people assume hygiene poverty is period poverty. Mm. And that is one slice, but it's also not having access to shampoo, shaving products. It's not having access to nappies, not being able to change your baby's nappy as regularly as required. It's not being able to wash school uniform and PE kit, which impacts the involvement in sport and team sports. And so what we sort of find with hygiene poverty is that there's a real, the overriding emotion around it really is shame. Mm. And what that leads to is then isolation, because people don't want to put themselves out there. If you've got dirty hair and you don't have body odor, or you can't afford period products. So what you do is you start to isolate a lot more, and that sort of lack of confidence then starts to spiral. Mm. And you know, if you can't afford to buy some of these very basic items, then yes, you're absolutely right, it inhibits your opportunity to create or maintain social interactions, to engage in school, to progress in the workplace. Mm. So, you know, they're real, it's a real life inhibitor.
Yeah.
If you can't present yourself as you are confident to. And that's the other thing, you know, that this concept of hygiene isn't sort of a threshold that you must reach. It's whatever it is that makes you feel confident to be able to present yourself. So for some people, they need to wash their hair every day.
Yeah.
Others don't wash it, you know, wash it once a week. Others need lipstick to be able to feel good about themselves, or concealer, or they need to be in freshly laundered ironed clothes. They need to be able to shave. You know, it's a very personal experience. And so what hygiene poverty is a really broad term, which is actually one of the difficulties that we have. Yeah. You know, when you start to explain it, there's a real light bulb moment. But actually, until you do, you sort of think, God, imagine having to sort of scrape out the contents of my baby's nappy and then reapply. What are the consequences of that? Distressed mother, distressed baby. How can a teenager engage in what they need to do if they suffer from body odor? Or, you know, how confident can you be going to a job interview if you don't feel you're presented correctly, or engage in school, or all of those things?
And of course, you know, as a society, you know, globally, we've all been massively affected mentally by the pandemic and, you know, the lockdowns and the changes to life. So people's mental health is already quite fragile, isn't it, in some cases? You know, I think it's going to take us a while to bounce back from the ongoing effects of that. And so then you lump on top, actually, people are finding themselves that never have before in these kind of levels of poverty. It's difficult, isn't it? It's another lump to bear. It's another sort of weight to carry around, and it's incredibly distressing. So, I mean, you mentioned one of the challenges there that you've faced with Hygiene Bank. Have there been any other major challenges that you've faced? Any sort of doors that have been sort of quite hard to open for you? Or people being
I think really it's, you know, what we are is a grassroots organisation that gives products to people that need it. Not directly. We're not like a food bank in that respect. We work with all the other local organisations within a community. So the food bank, the refuge, schools, job seekers, all those organisations and grassroots initiatives that support people in crisis and poverty, we work with them and they give it out. And as I said before, I think initially, you know, our massive way of us receiving product is drop-off points. So when the pandemic started, obviously, all of that stopped. All those drop-off boxes and cafes, leisure centres, retailers stopped. So we had to find a new way of operating. And actually, brands really stepped up to the plate and were delivering pallets and pallets and pallets. So then you've got another whole host of problems. You know, how do you manage receiving pallets and pallets and pallets? So then you're starting to get into issues of scaling and warehousing and really all the challenges really of a growing business. We just happen to be a not-for-profit business. Yeah. But we've learned quickly. We've got some phenomenal people that work for us that started out very, but most of our head office team actually started out as the early on volunteers. We've got a very experienced board of trustees. So, but yes, it's learning everything from, you know, what is it to be a charity, governance, policy, as I said before, warehousing, scaling up, all those things that sort of take us from being around my kitchen table, which is where we were, to sort of being now a national organisation.
Yeah, absolutely. And now life's sort of back to normal again. And I imagine you've got drop-off points all opening up again all over the place. So how can people find out, if people are listening to this today and they're keen to donate, how can they find out where the donation points are?
Well, if they go onto our website, which is thehygienebank.com, and they actually put in their postcode, you'll find all the list of drop-off points near you will come up. And we're very lucky in that we've partnered with Boots. And so aside from the cafes and the leisure centres and all of those things, we've got, you know, big yellow boxes in, 500 Boots stores. But if they go onto the website, that's the best way. And yes, everybody can get involved, from donating one bottle of deodorant, which is nothing, possibly, but is life-changing for a teenager that didn't have it. You know, or if you want to get involved at a greater level, you know, one of our biggest challenges is funding, as is every charity. So, you know, financial help is invaluable. You know, getting involved at work, encouraging your place of employment to get involved in either fundraising or doing a collection drive. Or, you know, we've got, I'm not sure if I really explained the way we work, is that we give out products to local community partners. Mm-hmm. And those community partners are everything from the school to the refuge to the food bank, etc. And we can only operate, we're much, very much a community driven grassroots organization. So we work where we have a project is where we work. But we have, you know, we've got a waiting list of over 400 community partners that want our services, but we don't necessarily have a project in that area, so we can support them. Because, you know, effectively we're a distribution mechanism and we need volunteers. So, you know, if you want to really get involved at a much deeper level, which is very, very rewarding, and be part of the fragment of your own community, you know, consider volunteering.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would a volunteer do then? So if someone lived in an area where a project didn't exist and they approached and said, actually, I've got time on my hands and I'd love to be of service here. Is there a way that they can help you set up that project in that area?
Yeah, so obviously we've got an entire toolkit and we've got a head office team that help and support those volunteers. But yes, effectively it's setting up a project, which means working within your local community to set up drop-off points, collecting those products, sourcing them, and then reallocating them out to those community partners in need.
Amazing. I mean, I can see how rewarding that could be. And you're quite right. I think it'll make you feel so much a part of your local community as well, won't it? It's, you know, you're very much involved at grassroots level there.
And I think it's got to be. This has got to be about a community supporting its own community. You know, I really very much fundamentally believe that there are times in our life when we need support, and there are times in our life when we can give support, and that support might be emotional, that support might be needing is something as functional as toothpaste. And so if you are able at this point in your life to help, then that's a really important thing to be able to do. And it's not just all about being altruistic. There's a great sense of reward about doing something that can help somebody. You know, it's that very cliched thing. You can't change the world, but you can change the world for one person. And really at the Hygiene Bag, you really, really can.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. So let's talk about the government then. I mean, you touched on governance a little bit there, but what are the government doing to support the sort of desperate needs of people? Is there anything being done at government level, or is it really just relying on charity?
Well, not so much at the moment. Obviously, they've addressed the period poverty issue. But I have to be perfectly honest, I don't think necessarily this is government's responsibility. It's a societal responsibility. You know, there are many stakeholders at play. Government, central government is one of them. Local government is the other. Businesses, citizens. As a business, we really need to look at what are we doing with our wages, with our employment, with our contract, with this whole gig economy. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, two-thirds of people that are considered to have fallen into poverty are working families. So work should be a route out of poverty. So if work is no longer a route out of poverty, something has gone wrong in the system. So all those stakeholders need to come together. This isn't just central government. It's government, it's businesses, it's charities. You know, we need to look at what is going on in this design system that we have, that two-thirds of people that are in poverty within the UK, which is the fifth wealthiest economy in the world, are living in poverty. How can that be? Yeah. What's gone wrong? But first we need to understand what hygiene poverty is. It's a facet of poverty. And actually we're very lucky in that we've had funding from Boots to do the first national UK research project into what hygiene poverty is.
Amazing.
Speaking to those with lived experience. So we can then start to form the narrative of what needs to happen. And so we can have much more of a mission-led approach, you know, and be the voice of change that we need to be, you know, raise awareness that this is a hidden issue. Because nobody really wants to stick their hand up and say, the reason I haven't been out, guys, is, you know what? I can't afford this, that, or the other. I mean, it's embarrassing and it's shameful.
It's shame, isn't it? Is that that's the really key emotion, I think, attached to all of this. But that sounds like an amazing project that you're embarking on. So you're now conducting a study to actually really define.
Yeah, but we've conducted it. We're just pulling it all together now. And we'll be able to release our findings in September. And it's the first national research project of its kind. And it will really give us a deep dive understanding into the factors at play. We then sit down with all the stakeholders and go, okay, how do we need to roadmap this? You know, I had a conversation with a female retailer worker a while ago. And this is a perfect example. And she works about 37 hours a week. So she works pretty much full time, but she's on a 4-hour contract. So when she was pregnant, she didn't get maternity leave and all those other things that happen. So you have to look at what are the traps that we have created that are dragging people into poverty.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And actually, I think you said something really beautiful there. And you said that it's, you know, society needs to learn how to support itself together.
Yeah.
You know, we are one. And actually, I think, you know, if there are any positives that came out of the pandemic, it is very much that we all found, I think we refound a sense of community and
absolutely
a sense of belonging to, you know, a town,
absolutely,
a village, a street. You know, actually, you know, I'm more aware of my neighbours than I've ever been. You know, it's a lovely feeling. You feel much more connected with people on a heart level. And so actually, you know, you could be more aware of just, you know, if you look at your own workplace, are there people that look like they're struggling? It's, you know, it's obvious. And, you know, it's getting rid of that sense of shame and making this a dialogue that we can be quite open about. And
absolutely,
actually, we get to a point where you can hold your hand up and say, I need a bit of help here. I'm really struggling.
And
absolutely. Stop that spiral. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely amazing.
You know, there can be systemic change, but it's not simple and it's a complex issue. And everybody needs to play their part.
And brilliant that Boots have stepped up and are supporting you. So they're obviously involved then on quite a large level. I mean, you mentioned that there are drop-off points in about 500 of their stores. I mean, that's quite significant of them.
Yeah, so, they're a huge partner for us. Yeah. And, you know, give us, as well as giving us, you know, pallets and pallets and pallets of product as well, they've also been a vehicle for us with other brands, so we can do promotions in store, and they've been a sort of, they've introduced us to other brands, and you know, they've been our sponsor for the research projects. You know, they really are sort of wanting to they really are a fundamental partner for us. That's and we've got many other brand partners as well, you know, that give us pallets and pallets of donations, which is fundamental for us to be able to meet even just partway the needs and the requests that we get. Yeah. As I said, we're supporting about 1,900 community partners at the moment on an ongoing basis.
That's amazing.
You know, and our biggest growth area is working with schools. You know, the national statistics are sort of 9 children in a class of 30 live in poverty. This was pre-pandemic. And 2/3 of those children come from working families. Going back to what I was saying about, you know, there's a lot more at play. This isn't just a central government element of responsibility. I don't believe. I think everybody has their part to play.
No, I think you're right there, Lizzie. I think you seem to really understand it on quite a deep level. Right, let's go over all of the details so people know where they can go, because I know this is such an emotive subject at the moment. And if you're not someone that's being touched directly by poverty, you probably know someone or a community that is. And so can we just repeat the website again that people can go to?
Yes. So it's thehygienebank.com. Mm-hmm. We've also got a very vibrant, active community on social. So at the Hygiene Bank, where, you know, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. There's lots of ways to access us. If you want to get into more of a deep dive, then the website's a good place to start.
Yeah. You know, I think getting this dialogue going is the first step, isn't it? It's about, you know,
raising awareness. And because as I said, it's a really hard, you know, concept to understand. Even when you said to me, you said, yeah, you know, women who can't afford period products, that's people's first go to. Yeah. But what about the kids that can't participate in sport because they can't get clean kits or uniform? You know, and if I look at my son, you know, his muddy sports kit that I wash X times a week, or whatever it is, there's so many barriers and so many levels to what hygiene poverty means. Once you get it, it is a light bulb moment, but it's not an easy explain.
Joe, you know, it's funny. You just made me think of something else. And my daughter, as I explained to you off air, actually, didn't I, before we came on, but she goes to an all-girls school, and, you know, girls can be very picky and very critical about each other and how they look and how their appearance is quite important to them. And in actual fact, I think this education starts in school. It starts with, look, you know, as a community, you know, on a wider level, we need to be much kinder to each other and understand that we faced quite difficult times recently, and we're still in it. We're still very much in it. And, you know, it's all about understanding that, you know, being hypercritical as your first go-to isn't the right attitude to have. You need to first of all stop and pause and think, is there something going on there that I can help with? And it's that mentality, isn't it, shifting into a kindness mentality and a caring mentality.
It is. And even from a practical level, what we're doing, you know, we work very, very closely with schools. I think I already said it's one of our growing community partner areas, because all the other areas where you can possibly access what we offer, you know, you've got to sort of be at a food bank or you've got to be in an outreach program for domestic abuse or job seekers, and there's a lot of people that are in crisis, and it's schools often that can identify those peoples and families first that need help. So if we can intervene in a little way to support them at that first stage before they're in a system of sorts, then that can perhaps just be the hand up that's needed.
Well, people want to help themselves, don't they? You know, if you are a working class family and you're finding yourself in that difficult situation, you're already a proactive family. You're already a family that wants to support itself and wants.
There's very few, you know, to sort of combat our critiques and our critical voices that flood us sometimes. There's very few people that abuse a system, really. They are few and far between. Most people want to be the best version of themselves that they can be. You know, and contribute as much as they can within their bubble or within a wider remit. And what hygiene poverty does is that it inhibits that ability to be part of that bubble.
Well, what a lovely chat. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for wanting to sort of spread the message, really.
It's so important. Such an important issue and very prominent, I think, at the moment. Well, thanks
again.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Boots the Chemist is a familiar sight on any UK high street. One of the backbones of our communities for 150 years, Boots have been serving the UK by providing pharmaceutical medicines, hygiene products and more. Its founder, Jesse Boot, wanted to ensure that everyone had access to soap and a sponge. 150 years on, and the Boots pledge is still the same, heartbreakingly, because this is what our society needs on a very basic level. Here to talk to me more about how Boots is supporting the Hygiene Bank and assisting with rising poverty at grassroots level is Lucy Reynolds, Vice President of Communications and CSR at Boots. Thank you for joining me today, Lucy. Now, we've been speaking to the hygiene banks and about their work that they're doing with hygiene poverty in the UK and the rising level of poverty as well. And they've mentioned that Boots is massively involved with their campaigns and supporting them. So let's start by talking about how you are involved with the hygiene banks and what Boots does.
Well, hi, Natalie. Well, look, thank you for inviting me to speak with you today. And we're always very happy to talk about our partnership with the Hygiene Bank. So we've been working with the Hygiene Bank for a couple of years, and it's a partnership that really makes sense because Boots has always had a focus on, we really always have looked at improving access to healthcare and democratising access to healthcare and to hygiene products and health products. And not a lot of people know, but we're over 170 years old and we were founded on that principle. Found a great quote recently from one of our founders, Jesse Boot, the Boot family, and he said that he believed everybody should have access to soap and a sponge. And that's one of the reasons that he started Boots. And that's lovely because that vision and that premise really sits at the heart of what we do today. And we still believe that, and we always have done. So that's why we really wanted to work with the Hygiene Bank. And we do two things with them, really. The first is very simple, in that we donate products to the Hygiene Bank, and then obviously they then donate those to the community groups and families who need them. We also help our customers to donate products to the Hygiene Bank as well. We match customer donations to encourage that donation. But we also use our platform to help raise the profile of hygiene poverty and the issue of hygiene poverty in the UK, and we try to work with the Hygiene Bank to use our profile to help them as well.
That's amazing. And what an amazing quote. That's, you know, nearly 150 year old quote that said everybody should have access to soap and a sponge, and how relevant that still is today. I mean, that's sort of quite mind-blowing, actually, to think how relevant it was then and still how relevant it is today. And I know that you have donation points, don't you, within certain stores throughout the UK. How many stores are you do you have these donation points in?
So we've got donation points in around 500 stores at the moment. And that's been brilliant because actually the Hygiene Bank is a relatively young charity. So at Boots, we're helping them to grow. The only limitation is really the availability of project managers, really. So volunteers who will in their own time be happy to sort of run that project in their local area. But we're increasing the number of hygiene banks we can. And as more people come forward as volunteers, the more donation points that we can place in our stores. Yeah. We've actually had some really lovely examples of store managers or colleagues who work in stores who have put their hand up and said, well, you know, I'll be a hygiene bank volunteer for my area. And it means that we can then put a donation point in the store. So that's been really lovely to see everybody get on board in that sense.
So how can people, if people are listening into the show right now and they're keen to become a volunteer and to help to spread that, what is it they do as a volunteer within a Boots store?
Okay, so if you were to volunteer for the Hygiene Bank in your community, you would become the lead for distributing the products to community groups and those in need within your community. So typically you would come into Boots probably sort of a couple of times a month to empty the donation points, and then you would be responsible for distributing them. But you might want to come into the store, check how the donation point's going, see if it's full, working with our store team. And we see it's really nice that the relationship between the guys in store and the Hygiene Bank volunteers, you know, they start to build a relationship over time, which is great. But the fantastic thing about those roles, those volunteer roles and the projects, is that you're really helping your local community, and you know where the donations are going, and you're helping other people in the area where you live and work. And we've seen, you know, people really like to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing that a lot when we're talking about issues like hygiene poverty, that communities really want to support each other. And actually really important that a very well-known British retailer like Boots is getting behind this. Why is it you chose to support this campaign?
Yeah, so we met Lizzie Hall, who's the founder of the Hygiene Bank. Actually, she won an award that Boots sponsored. It was an entrepreneur award a couple of years ago. And so a relationship was formed. And then through getting to know the charity, we realised that we could really play a key role in helping the charity to grow. And also, it was a route for us to be able to help our local communities as well. And Boots has always had a very, you know, a sense of responsibility to have a positive impact on the communities in which we operate. You know, we're a pharmacy at our heart, and our pharmacists have that direct relationship with the community, and we know our customers really well. They know us. We have that relationship. So we always want to be able to help our communities. And we just realised that actually if we partnered with the Hygiene Bank, not only could we lend them our platform and our kind of brand, but they can help us as well, because the Hygiene Bank give us a route to be able to donate to our local communities, and we're really, really grateful to them for that.
And you mentioned earlier on that you actually match donations that are put in by the public and the local communities. What sort of products do you find that people are donating, or what sort of products do you find that Boots are donating regularly?
Okay, so people donate all sorts of things. But the main things are the products that the Hygiene Bank really need. So they need key essentials. They need soap, shampoo, shower gel, deodorant. They need toothbrushes, toothpaste. We ran a back to school campaign actually last year. And the reason we did that is because through the Hygiene Bank, we realised that actually a lot of children were going to school and they didn't have some of those products. Because actually, if you're living in poverty, sometimes you have to make a really hard choice between what you spend your money on. And we don't want any family to have to choose between feeding their children or keeping them clean. So we spoke to the Hygiene Bank, and they said the things that families really need, especially around back to school time, were toothbrushes and toothpaste, deodorant, and those basic hygiene essentials like soap, shampoo, and shower gel. Also tampons and sanitary products.
Yeah, we're finding that a lot, aren't we? That the, you know, the period products are the ones that are needed the most, because often you'll find a mum sacrificing her own well-being for her children, and that's just quite a sad fact for some people. And I think, you know, touching on that with schools, it's so important, isn't it? You think about our young children, they're so affected by their appearance and how they look and how they feel. There's a lot going on there. And in actual fact, if a child's going to school and getting maybe picked on because they're not especially as clean as they should be, that can really affect their own mental health, can't it, as well?
Well, teachers are telling us that, yeah, exactly as you said, it can affect young people's confidence, and then that could affect their performance in school, yeah, and the way that they're engaging in school. So it seems like a really small thing, but actually a can of deodorant and a bottle of shower gel can make a huge difference.
And I've heard that you've got a link with Unilever as well. Can you tell me how Boots and Unilever are working together to support this crisis?
Yeah, so Unilever are one of our biggest suppliers, and they have come on board to work together with Boots and the Hygiene Bank. And we ran a joint campaign to raise awareness of hygiene poverty during the National Hygiene Week at the end of last year. And they were fantastic because they donated a number of Unilever products to the Hygiene Bank, and they encourage customers to donate. So again, there's a donation mechanism where they would match donations as well. So brilliant to see big suppliers and household names like Unilever get involved as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of this, you know, I mean, the Hygiene Bank, obviously a relatively small organisation really in terms of communities across the UK, but when you've got the likes of Boots and Unilever getting behind them, they're going to achieve much more. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Lucy. Your input's been really valuable. And does Boots have listed on their website where donation points are located?
Yes, you can check on boots.com and you can have a look and see if there's a donation point in your local area. So please do come in and donate products. You don't have to have bought them from Boots. You can have bought them from anywhere. As long as they've not been used, please come donate them.
Yeah, brilliant. That's excellent. Thank you. And if you're interested in becoming a volunteer, I mean, once again, you can go to the Hygiene Bank's website as well to find out more about becoming a volunteer in your area. Well, thank you so much for that, Lucy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Finally, I think it's important to consider the wider demographic of communities that rising poverty is affecting. With the war in the Ukraine and other global catastrophes displacing hundreds of thousands of people worldwide, there are groups of refugees and asylum seekers in the UK that need continued support. This is tough when we're all feeling the pinch, but it is possible to support in even a small way. Joining me now is Judith Shalkowski, a project worker and coordinator for Women's Services at Meeting Point Leeds. This is a charitable community support group that seeks to provide the basic support required by refugees and asylum seekers in the Leeds area. She is here now to explain what we can do and why supporting the fringe communities matters also. Lovely to have you with us today. Thank you for giving us your time, Judith. Obviously, we're talking all about hygiene poverty this week, and it's unfortunately and sadly really very prominent in the UK at the moment. So let's start by talking a bit about who Meeting Point are and what they do.
Thank you, Natalie. I'm really pleased to be able to talk about Meeting Point. Meeting Point is a small but really vibrant charity that's based in Leeds, West Yorkshire, and We're actively working with and for refugees and asylum seekers. We aim to help them to settle into and be involved in their communities and to support their employability. We're really a small team. We do this by providing a whole range of face-to-face services and volunteering opportunities and bringing together different organizations to meet the needs of refugees. We're focusing on their health, their employment, their families, their hardship needs, and we're providing very practical, basic food and toiletries at weekly drop-ins. And two of our services are English classes and a vibrant women's group.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, obviously, you know, with the Ukraine crisis going on, we've seen a lot more refugees coming over to the UK. Is this an issue that even before the Ukraine crisis, are we seeing a lot more, you know, groups coming from abroad to resettle in the UK? Is this commonplace now?
Well, from certain places, there are more. We see people who are come to Leeds, and we don't do a lot of promotion because a lot of people tell their friends, because it is very important to feel welcomed. Yeah. There are certain, you know, certain groups that are very new and have a lot of urgent needs when they first arrive. So we try to accommodate everyone, as well as people who've gone on to settle and even obtain citizenship, because there are opportunities for them there to socialize and to get some of their practical needs met.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, at the moment, you know, in the UK, we really are feeling the pinch, aren't we, with the cost of living spiraling a little bit out of control, I'd say. And, you know, even, you know, working class families that were finding themselves, you know, really getting by okay, suddenly even they're struggling. So, I mean, how are we in a position to help these people? Tell me, what sort of help do they need and what can you provide for them?
At Meeting Point, we very practically provide a very basic food parcel, a takeaway meal. We provide clothing for adults and children, household items. We also have lots of other ways of helping and supporting people through different organizations. Through Bloody Good Period, providing the period products. We get supermarkets giving fresh within date items that we can give out, including toiletries, which makes a big difference. At our women's group, we provide a hot lunch, and then we also try to support women with their whole health needs around physical health, mental health, and very practical ways of reminding them that they're human.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I talk a lot on this show, so it's a beauty focused show. So we focus a lot on, you know, female body issues and everything affects us. Now, to any woman who's born in the UK, raised in the UK, lived in the UK her whole life, we suffer tremendous issues with our bodies, physically, emotionally, hormonal changes, you know, childbirth, changes after childbirth. It must be incredibly scary to a woman who has been displaced from her own country, you know, for no fault of her own, and she finds herself in a very strange new place with no access to any of the normal support that she would have had at home. So it's a scary time, isn't it, for some women coming over? I mean, do you find women are quite fearful when they first arrive?
I think they're overwhelmed and often fearful, because there's I myself have moved to the UK from another country, and yet I knew the language. So we've got the complexity of often, more often than not, women coming without English and having to understand, you know, products. I remember coming and looking in the shopping center and thinking, okay, I've come from an English-speaking country, but everything looks different. And for them, that will be, it will be very hard. And often women will say, tell me about this product. And you sometimes realize you can't even tell until you read really carefully that shampoo or conditioner.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
there is a lot of support necessary around learning enough English to be able to release some of the stress involved with everything being new.
Sure. And obviously you receive donations, presumably, to Meeting Point. So you receive food donations and you also receive, you know, hygiene product donations. Have you found donations have been slowing down a bit because of the cost of living crisis that we're experiencing? Or are people still really willing and trying to do what they can?
We receive most of our food and toiletries from individuals as well as shop major supermarkets through a wonderful scheme. And so we're able to give out parcels every week. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. Because we found we wanted to give more toiletries, we've been able to try to find people who will be interested in supporting in that way. And so some individuals have helped out with that. We do get some from supermarkets. So if people go into the supermarket and they have a chance to donate to a charity, you know, charities like ours are getting those items and being able to give them out. Things like pads as well as shampoo and soaps. So that is a real lifeline for the women because we can't afford to go out and buy those things for them. Yeah. Bloody Good Period Charity has been phenomenal. Since 2017, they've provided all the period products. And recently, they've enabled us to have for free as well the period pants, which has made such a difference for women who say, I really don't want to keep contributing to landfill for things like pads.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's a great invention anyway, isn't it? The period pants, they're brilliant. They're wonderful. And the fact that, you know, you're getting that sort of product donated as well, a really high-end product, really, that's wonderful for the women that are affected by this. So, I mean, I know we've been talking a lot recently about, you know, the need for period products, but you just touched then on things like shampoos. Now, this is a self-esteem issue, isn't it? You know, these people have been displaced. They found themselves in a strange country, trying to fit in, trying to make new friends, find new support networks, figure out where they're going to get their next meal from. And actually, think, you know, someone listening in might think, well, why do they need beauty products per se? But it's more than that, isn't it? It's very basic items that allow them to feel clean, allow them to feel presentable, allow them to go out into the community. Do you think it makes a difference to people?
I believe it makes a huge difference. And so every couple of months, we try to have a pamper session at the women's group. And we've got different organizations that will contribute items for that, bathing items. And we have someone who comes and does foot care. We have people cutting hair. Really, all those things are way too expensive when you only have a small benefit. Every day, it might take you the benefit you have that day to just get to get help. And so you can't save for and pay for yourself, for your children. And you don't, certainly don't get any luxury item unless you give it out.
I think that's lovely because everybody deserves to feel that. It's a sense of love, isn't it? It's a sense of personal worth, self-worth, you know, and belonging in a community. It's just so deeply important. I always say, you know, this is more than just a vanity project. This is can affect people on a very, very deep level. And so it's so important they get that support. I mean, obviously, you know, in the UK, we are facing a real sort of financial crisis, really. People are feeling the pinch, but I know that there will be people listening into this that want to help, that want to get involved. How can our listeners help you? Can they help you even if they're outside of the Leeds area? What can they do? Can they send parcels?
That's really helpful to say that as a small charity, we really do depend on individuals as well as we have churches and other organizations. We get some funding, but yes, people can go on to our website, which is www.meetingpointleeds.org.uk, and they can go in onto our Facebook page, Meeting Point Leeds, and see the kind of work we do and see the ways in which they want to help. We have a whole team of volunteers who are so committed to helping beneficiaries and helping with the drop-in, helping with the women's group, the English classes. So much of what we do comes from the commitment of volunteers. And people can volunteer, people can just, if they're thinking about clearing out, come and bring in donations as well. But also to just, I would say, the most important thing at the moment is to recognize that there are people there who have already had a traumatized past for whom they really depend and hope for anything to reduce their stress. So sometimes it's just a smile, and sometimes it's, you know, making a commitment of a few pounds a month that all goes towards helping beneficiaries to really settle well and feel that confidence and self-esteem that you mentioned, that inner beauty, that outer beauty, and that sense of relief for having a life back.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I know that, you know, I sort of get the impression, I talk to a lot of people every day for this show, and the sense I get from society in the UK is that there's a real willingness to join together and help on a societal level at the moment. And actually, there might be some people listening in that say, how on earth can I help? I'm struggling myself. But actually, that sense of community, you really get the feeling for that when you're reaching out and helping, you get help back. It's definitely a two-way process, isn't it? There's a lot to it that makes you feel good. So I'd really recommend people to go on your website and have a look how they can get involved. But thank you so much, Judith, for your input today. It's really interesting to hear, because obviously we've been talking a lot about, you know, UK residents and how this crisis is affecting them. But of course, there's a whole other set of our community that are also being equally affected by this pinch that we're all feeling. So thank you for your input on that.
Thank you for the interview.
So the message to take away from the show today is that if you are able to help, however small a donation, however impactful your volunteer time, as a society, we are able to support each other. And there are huge benefits that can be shared by us all when we do. I hope you're able to find time today to visit some of the websites and social media handles that we've mentioned, and just to find out a little bit more about what you can do on even a small level. Brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you.